Welcome into the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Pleased as always that you can be with us this week, week 15 in the NFL season, and plenty of games with major playoff implications looming. So we did do things a little bit differently this week, though. Rather than preview a bunch of the games, which you can certainly find elsewhere on the Pro Football Weekly website, we do breakdowns of every single game on the docket. Our fantasy football podcast looks through the entire slate from a fantasy perspective, and I feel like we do a good job covering all the games from all angles on the website. So today, I want to focus on the coaching hot seat, hot seats, I should say, because many of them are warming up, and our very own Hub Arkish has all the latest from what he's hearing, what we're hearing from around the league on a potential vacancy, not a potential, an imminent vacancy in Jacksonville. Already a vacancy in Los Angeles and a few other that very well could end up opening here in a couple weeks, and who may be able to fill them. So Hub Arkish will join me shortly to go over all of that, and then we will also have the voice of the Dallas Cowboys, Brad Sham, a friend and a friend for a long time of the Arkish family, and also who better to talk about the Cowboys, the 11-2 Dallas Cowboys, and always noise going on with that organization. Brad will break that down like only he can here in a little bit. So before we get started, as I do each week, I want to remind our listeners, first, I want to thank you for being with us again. And a quick reminder that if you haven't done so already, you should head over to iTunes and subscribe to the Pro Football Weekly Podcast. While you're there, you should definitely leave us a rating, preferably a 5-star one, and some feedback. What are we doing well? What can we do better? We value all of your interactions and definitely appreciate those. So that being said, let's dive right in with Hub Arkish and see what is going on the head coaching carousel and see what Hub is hearing on that show.
Hello. There's my guy, Hub Arkish. What's up, Hub? How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Arthur?
I'm doing well, thank you. Before we dive right into things, Hub, of course, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly. Yes, he's also my dad, and nice enough to take about 10 or 15 minutes to talk all things way we hear it around the NFL. But, Hub, first, are you staying warm? I know you're kind of braving your way around the city going from TV show to TV show today.
It is a bit chilly in Chicago. I'm told it's actually about 10 degrees warmer than it's going to be on Sunday when the Green Bay Packers play the Chicago Bears at Soldier Field, and what they are projecting will be the coldest game in the history of Chicago Bears football played at home. It sounds a little strange to me because I was just starting in the business. I remember broadcasting the 85 divisional playoff game against the Giants, and it seems to me that was a little colder, about 4 or 5 below. Apparently the official numbers are saying no. There have obviously been some frigid games in Chicago, but it's a cold week. The good news is that we're told that it should be all the way back up in the high teens or maybe low 20s by the time Christmas weekend rolls around.
Beautiful. So we'll have that to look forward to. And Hub, as someone who was on the sidelines of that wild card game, Seahawks versus Vikings last year, is this like tropical heat wave? I mean, how was that comparatively temperature-wise? It had to have been colder, or no?
Yeah, I am told that that was officially the coldest playoff game, or the coldest game, I guess, in history. It was colder than the Ice Bowl, Dallas, and of course, the Green Bay Packers. Temperature at kickoff at the University of Minnesota Stadium was 9 degrees below zero. That was the temperature, not the wind chill. Wind chills were, I'm told, between 30 and 40 below. One of the interesting things about that game, which, of course, the Seahawks famously won 10-9 on the shanked Blair Walsh 26-yard field goal in the final minute of the game, is that all NFL stadiums are set up north to south. For some reason, that stadium, University of Minnesota Football Stadium, is set up east to west, and the Seattle sideline was in the shade the entire game, and there was a temperature mounted on the brick wall behind their sideline that registered as low as 13 below. The Vikings sideline on the other side was in the shade on the west. I'm sorry, in the sun on the west
right.
side
mm-hmm.
throughout the game, and the thermometer on that wall registered as high as 1 or 2 above zero. So, even though both teams were outrageously cold, it was apparently about 15 degrees warmer in the sun. That may be one of the reasons that the Vikings outplayed the Seahawks pretty much all day until the last 5-6 minutes of the game, and then of course Walsh missed the field goal and Seattle moved on. And the Vikings went home.
Yeah, Hub, Blair Walsh must have been hanging out on the Seattle sideline that day, I guess. But no, it's that was a fun one, and well, fun for those of us watching at home. I'm sure it was anything but fun for you to cover, although I'm sure one you'll remember for a long time. Pretty historic. Not really the reason that we are talking today, Hub. There's some great way we hear it up at ProFootballWeekly.com this week, and I say great because I believe we got some pretty good scoops. But it's never fun to break these types of stories. Nonetheless, we have to share what we know and tell the listeners what you know about what's going on in Jacksonville. And they still have a head coach there, but it sounds like they also may have his replacement lined up.
Yeah, we've got it for some pretty good sources close to the situation that Gus Bradley already knows that he is gone. We're not saying that there is a formal coaching search underway. That would be against certain rules, you know, tampering around the NFL, but it happens all the time. With agents talking to representatives of football teams. And apparently a number of folks are aware that Mike Smith, the defensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, is out trying to line up assistant coaches for his staff, and that he believes that he will be the first choice of the Jacksonville Jaguars. There's a lot of reasons you can connect the dots and have this make sense, principally that prior to his first stint as a head coach with the Atlanta Falcons, he was the very successful defensive coordinator of the Jacksonville Jaguars from 2004 through 2007. So there's history there. There's relationships there that you'll probably want to mention or get into. And so we believe this is a pretty solid report that Mike Smith is the frontrunner for that job.
Okay, so he's been in Jacksonville before. He also, of course, has been with Dave Caldwell, the Jaguars' current general manager. They were together in Atlanta and oversaw a pretty successful run there as well. So a lot of dot connecting with Mike Smith and the Jaguars. Of course, no one's sure that Dave Caldwell is safe. So this is all, you know, this is what we're hearing, but there's a lot to be decided. I think the one thing that has already been decided is that Gus Bradley is out. And frankly, it's probably overdue. A nice guy, but hasn't been a very good coach at all for them. So what do you think?
Right, and, you know, just to finish the story there, you mentioned Caldwell. He got to Atlanta as the college scouting director. I can't remember if it was college scouting director or pro personnel director in 2008, held that position until 2011. Mm-hmm. In 2012, he was appointed the director of player personnel in Atlanta, left after 2012 to take the GM job in Jacksonville, and of course hired Gus Bradley. From 2008 to 2012, Mike Smith's first year as a head coach, they were 54-22 together in Atlanta. So with the assumption that there is better talent there than what they have shown under Gus Bradley, and that David Caldwell does survive, it's just one more reason that we feel pretty good about what we're hearing from sources, that there is definitely some meat on his bone as far as this story goes.
So, Hub, it's just dawning on me as we're talking about it right now, but if we're hearing these stories, I wonder if the Buccaneers defenders may be hearing this too, and do you think there's maybe an awkward situation brewing in Tampa as that team right now is as hot as any in football?
Well, I would think not, Arthur, because if there was, then we'd have to wonder how the Falcons offensive players feel about the fact that you know, Kyle Shanahan is one of the hottest prospects in the league. How do the Lions players on both sides of the ball feel about the fact that Jim Bob Cooter and Terrell Austin are hot prospects? Anywhere you look where coordinators are successful, you know that they're working to become head coaches. There's nothing unusual about this. You keep your focus on the job at hand. Playing well and winning the rest of the way out helps the players involved when it comes time to negotiate their contracts, and it enhances the coaches' opportunities to get those jobs. So this is pretty much a matter of course in the NFL, kind of everyday business, and so I don't think it should be a problem for anyone.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I guess all I meant is the little nugget about how Mike Smith may already be lining up assistants. So if he's perhaps getting the cart in front of the horse, but who knows? Again, Tampa's on a roll, and they have a huge game Sunday night against the Cowboys. And actually, we will also have on the program later on Brad Sham, the voice of the Cowboys, breaking down that game. So should be a lot of fun. Hub, another story that we've been working on at Pro Football Weekly with the Los Angeles Rams, of course, the first domino to fall, Jeff Fisher is out. I think we can all agree that is also overdue, and his replacements, the search is on. Actually, there's an NFL.com report today from Steve Weich that Les Snead is part of the head coaching search, although he has not been assured he'll be returning to Los Angeles. So maybe that's typical Rams. I mean, that sounds a little backwards to me. But Hub, I believe that you've heard that there are a couple high-profile coaches that we can already all but eliminate from this search.
Right. Let me just back up real quickly, because we never, with our reporting, want to put anybody on the spot. It is quite possible that Mike Smith is reaching out to folks to consider their interest in joining him on a staff if he gets the head coaching job, because often one of the most important parts of the interview process is the owner, the GM, want to know who your staff
right.
is going to be. So right. it may not mean that Smith believes he has the job so much as he is preparing to interview as best he can should he get the opportunity at the job. And again, I'm quite sure that he is not letting his preparation for the Cowboys or any other games the Bucks have left get in the way. As far
right.
as the Rams situation, Arthur, it's consistent with everything the Rams do. What we do know is that neither Stan Kroenke or the president of his team, Kevin Demoff, are football people. They're not. You know, Demoff grew up with his dad, Marvin Demoff, a renowned football agent. He's been on the business side. Stan Kroenke is a real estate developer. They may love the game, but they're not qualified football people to make these decisions. When you look at Les Snead, he's a lifer. He's a guy who actually has done a great job building that defense. Unfortunately, has missed on some picks on the offensive side. Whether or not he has a long-range future there, he is still the best person in that organization, at least the most qualified person in that organization to identify who the top candidate should be. And so it's not shocking that he is involved in this process. It is, however, an indication, you know, it came out just a week ago that, in fact, he and Jeff Fisher had both signed two-year extensions prior to the start of the season, even though we didn't find out about it or it wasn't confirmed until the last couple of weeks. It sounds like Snead is going to get a chance to be involved in the hiring of a head coach to work out at least one more year, if not two, of his contract extension and be involved in this process. We should also note that because of the deal that was made, whether it was Snead or Fisher working together, even if the Stan Kroenke, if the owner had a stamp on it, at the end of the day, the Rams don't have picks in the first or third round this year. So even if you're not totally sold on Snead going forward, you're not risking a lot by letting him work one more year of his contract and at least help you out with this process.
That makes sense. And a lot of people, I don't know at what point the NFL dynamics switched where the coach either chooses their general manager or they have to be on board with the GM. I mean, it didn't used to be like that, but I have read some reports that that could potentially that could hamstring their coaching search if Les Snead is going to be kind of the guy who still remains. Have we seen recently where head coaches have had the opportunity that it's kind of a package deal, and do you think that's the right way to do it?
No, it's the wrong way to do it, and it is highly unusual. You don't see much of it around the league. It's interesting that one of the first was when Jeff Fisher was involved in the hiring of Les Snead.
Right.
One of the second was a couple of years ago when Lovie Smith was hired in Tampa, given complete control of the organization. He hired Jason Light, and then just 2 years later, it was Jason Light, and I don't want to say a coup, but in cahoots,
yep.
with Cutter,
yep.
that got Lovie fired, and Cutter got the job. But those are the only two instances around the league that I can think of. Obviously, Bill Belichick is in complete control of the New England Patriots, but he is basically his own GM. In Dallas, you don't really have a GM. It's the owner and his son who are doing it. Other than that, you look around the league, you go out and get a top football executive, usually with a GM title, sometimes a president or VP of football operations, and they then hire the coach.
Right. Again, very atypical. I do want to say, though, what about Adam Gase? Did he get to pick his guy in South Beach this offseason, or no? Was there someone that remained? I'm drawing
a
blank.
You've got two people there. You've got Dennis Hickey with a GM title, who was there when Gase was brought in, but then you've also got Mike Tannenbaum, the business guy out of New York, the Steve Ross guy, who I believe is the president of football operations. And so I would say that the Miami front office is a mess. It hasn't worked very well for him in terms of a lot of things, but it does look like they may have gotten it right with Gase. And if they're
right.
smart, they will listen to their bright young coach, and maybe they have a positive future. But that's actually a muddled front office situation where there are several people in authority over Adam Gase in terms of the football operations.
Yeah, and I had a lot of doubts about that whole structure, as you just alluded to, and then even some of the picks that Mike Tannenbaum was responsible for this offseason. And I got to admit, some of them have panned out, and Adam Gase has been nothing if not impressive. We'll see what he can do now down the stretch with Matt Moore. Obviously, a tough situation with Miami still very much alive in the playoff hunt. So, Hub, on the way out, we got about another 2.5 minutes or so. I just want to put you on the spot because I'm so good at doing that. After we know Fisher's out, we know Bradley is about to be out. Who's on the thinnest ice after that? Maybe one or two guys. We think it's going to be a slower head coach carousel, but we know there's going to be at least one or two more.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a much slower year than what we've gotten used to over the last 5, 6, 7 years, in part because we've had so much turnover the last 5, 6, 7 years. You've got a lot of coaches just working in their first, second, third season and getting the benefit of the doubt. If I had to pick the next, I would guess that the guy in the most trouble right now is Rex Ryan in Buffalo. He kind of made his own bed there, saying at the start of the season, we are a playoff team. I'm told that his act, if you will, has worn thin on Terry and Kim Pegula, the owners of that football team. We've got another big story coming with that that we're trying to confirm one more source, and we'll break that probably on Monday. But he's probably on the hottest seat right now. In spite of what people are hearing reported, I don't think there's much chance that either Todd Bowles in New York or John Fox in Chicago lose their jobs. I think they're going to get at least one more year. Mike McCoy has to be in jeopardy as the Chargers have started losing again. They are 4-4 since that 1-4 start, but they've now dropped their last two. They've been clobbered by injuries, but at some point McCoy is probably going to have to pay the piper. Other places around the league. I don't know that Chip Kelly is secure in San Francisco. Not sure why he would be when you look at the way that that team is playing. But one-and-dones are pretty unusual, particularly when you are following a one-and-done in Jim Tomsula. So we're assuming that Kelly will get another year. But that's kind of it. You know, now there's always a surprise or two. The one surprise I've been told to look out for is there is no chance that the Cardinals would fire Bruce Arians. But Bruce Arians has had repeated health issues, and so there may be some conversation about whether or not what he is doing is best for him individually. You know, a couple other teams that we will be keeping an eye on, but we just don't expect anything. Marvin Lewis probably should be fired in Cincinnati, but Mike Brown never does what he should do. And some people are wondering, why is Hugh Jackson getting a pass on being so bad? It's one thing to be rebuilding and redeveloping, but they're going to become the third team in NFL history to go 0-16, the first since 0-8 when Detroit did it. That got Rod Marinelli fired. We see that Rod Marinelli is a very good defensive coordinator. Is it possible that Hugh Jackson's an excellent offensive coordinator who shouldn't be the head coach? We think he's going to get another year, but you can never rule it out when a team is that bad.
You mentioned the one-and-dones in San Francisco and Cleveland, or potential one-and-dones, probably long shots, but San Francisco, interesting, because it seems Trent Baalke very much hard-pressed to hang on there, and if he doesn't, I think all bets are probably off with Chip Kelly. We'll have to wait and see. Hub, the one name you didn't mention, and this is on the way out, and I'm not asking you to crawl inside Jim Irsay's brain. I can't imagine a scarier place to be, but Chuck Pagano, the Colts are getting ready to miss the playoffs for the second year in a row. That never happened under Peyton Manning and Bill Polian. I know that Grigson and Pagano got matching extensions this past offseason, but I don't think that that's going to sit well in Indianapolis when you have Andrew Luck in the prime of his career and healthy for, what, 13, 14 games at least this season.
You know, Arthur, it's not going to sit well, but how do you fire Chuck Pagano without firing Ryan Grigson? And I think they pretty much, you know, Irsay tied them together at the hip when he gave them the matching four-year extensions. Now you're talking about paying a coach and a GM for the next 3 years to not work for you while you have to replace them. That's very hard to do. I think the other thing you got to look at is, as much as Andrew Luck may be the next Peyton Manning, he was as responsible as anybody for that game they lost last week against Houston. And if they win that game, they're in the driver's seat in the AFC South. So, you know, Jimmy Irsay is an interesting guy, and certainly a bit of a free spirit, certainly different from most NFL owners you see. He's also the winningest NFL owner in the league over the last 15, 20 years. You know, even more so than Robert Kraft, although this year may tip the scales in Kraft's favor. So everything I'm hearing is that at least one more year with Pagano and Grigson, one more chance to bolster, if you will, the offensive line and the defense. You never say never, but according to my sources, Chucky Pagano and Ryan Grigson get one more season.
Interesting stuff. And Jim Irsay did say from the owners' meetings in Dallas this week that his Colts team could very easily be 10-3 had they gotten a couple different breaks instead of 6-7. So that's a situation to keep an eye on. I would say still, you know, who knows what happens. But and you're right, he has been one of the best owners in the league. And while we talk about Green Bay and Pittsburgh and New England for all the stability that they have instilled in their franchises, Indianapolis is right up there as well. So Hub, we'll let you go. That was great stuff as always. And stay warm, make it home safely after a busy day. And we'll look forward to talking to you tomorrow.
One other thought for our listeners, and I try and stay away from Jim Harbaugh stories because folks who have followed us for a while know that Jim's a friend. We've had a relationship going back almost 30 years, as well as the family. We're not best friends. I have not spoken to him since Jeff Fisher was hired. But these reports of Harbaugh to the Rams or Pete Carroll to the Rams are really irresponsible. You know, you get media folks, whether they're TV, radio, or print journalists, who want to make a splash, and this is what the Rams have to do. That's fine, but it's not very responsible when it's something they can't do, okay? Again, I haven't talked to Jim since Jeff was fired, but Harbaugh is not leaving the University of Michigan. Pete Carroll is not leaving the Seattle Seahawks. We'll put our Pro Football Weekly reputation on that, and so let's put that aside and start talking about what does make sense.
And I believe that there was a Colin Coward report, and let's just throw it out there. I think he was a big part of the driving force in the Jim Harbaugh discussion starting. So, Hub, just because you mentioned, I do have to just ask quickly. Stan Kroenke, though, he won't land either of those big fish, get them in the boat, but that's the type of search I imagine that he's going to embark on, trying to get a flashy name for that market.
You know, everybody assumes that, but at the end of the day, as I wrote the other day, people don't buy tickets to watch coaches coach, and as long as he gets a coach who can win football games, he's going to be fine. And the new stadium isn't going to be ready until, I believe, it's 2019 anyway. You're right. Not going to sell tickets because of the coach you hire. So Kroenke is a very good businessman. He's not a football guy. He's a pretty good businessman, and I expect they're going to try and identify the best football coach rather than the biggest man.
All right. Well, between, you know, regardless of how you feel about Jared Goff with some of the other pieces they have there, two former Rookie of the Years and a defense that looks largely ready to win now, and that Los Angeles market, I would imagine it's a pretty desirable job. So will be fun to monitor what happens there. And Hub, we'll cut you for real this time. Thank you again. And again, we'll talk to you tomorrow on the Pro Football Weekly radio show.
All right. Just remember, with all these jobs, it's all about the Benjamins. So it's not who you get to take them. I'm sorry, it's not about how many you give, but it's who you get to take them.
All right. You heard it there from Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, joining us on the PFW podcast as he does every week.
And thank you again to Hub Arkish, our publisher and editor at Pro Football Weekly, getting us up to speed on all of the hot seat buzz around the NFL. Next, we head to Dallas, where the Cowboys are coming off their first loss since week one. Yes, it was once again to the Giants last Sunday night. A defensive struggle, a 10-7 victory, of course, for the Giants. And Brad Sham, the voice of the Cowboys, is coming up next to help us break it all down. Talk a little bit about how the Cowboys are responding to really their first bit of adversity and how they're preparing for another really hot team in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers riding a 5-game winning streak heading into Arlington. So without further ado, Brad Sham, the voice of the Cowboys.
Good morning.
Good morning. There is our next guest, Brad Sham, the voice of the Cowboys. So pleased you could be with us today. How are you, Brad?
Hello.
Yes, Brad, how are you? You're on the Pro Football Weekly podcast.
Doing,
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us today. This is Brad Sham, the voice of the Cowboys for the past 38 years. That is amazing, and what an amazing season it has been thus far. How's it treating you so far, Brad?
Well, you know, it's been surprising, which, and when they're surprising in a good way, then it's always fun. I mean, people say to me a lot, you must be really having fun this year, and I tell them truthfully, I always have fun, but it would be a lie to say that it wasn't a little extra spicy when it's going so much better than anybody thought.
Yeah, I can believe it to be, you know, from worst to first, and after everything that the organization went through last year with the quarterback carousel, it's got to be pretty cool to find some stability. Brad, before we talk some Cowboys, I just have to take a quick second. It's a pleasure for all our listeners to get to hear about maybe the best story in the NFL this season from your unique perspective. But I'm selfishly also kind of excited because you grew up with my father, Hub, my grandfather, Arthur, who I never got to meet, and just kind of a cool vantage point. Do you have any interest in embarrassing Hub and or Arthur on the Pro Football Weekly podcast before we get started?
I don't have any any interest in doing that because the fact is that your grandfather and my father were best friends, and your granddad's been gone a long time. My dad's been gone about 7 years, 8 years. But they were best friends, and our families have been very, very close for a long time. So it has been a great joy for me to follow all of your family's success.
Oh, thank you, and definitely likewise the same on our end. And I've just heard all kinds of unbelievable things about you. So it is, again, a great pleasure to have you on the show. And let's talk a little bit Cowboys. I know there's been a little bit of craziness this week with suddenly there's a quarterback controversy. It's amazing how quickly an 11-game win streak.
But there isn't, though. There really isn't.
Okay.
There's Jerry blue-skying, yeah. And he has the luxury of not having to have a filter.
Right.
He can say whatever he wants. And when he talks about Romo playing, I believe that he's not sending a message to Prescott. He is playing out what would be a great, wonderful, romantic movie in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
And if it evolved that way, it would be everything he said. It would, what a story! And as Troy Aikman said on local radio and perhaps on Twitter, yeah, it would also be a pretty good story if your fourth round draft choice rookie quarterback wound up taking you to the same place. So either way, and because it's the quarterback position, because it's the owner slash general manager, and frankly, Arthur, because it's the Dallas Cowboys.
Right.
Then when it gets talked about, people everywhere, including in Dallas-Fort Worth, jump up and down, get all excited. One reason the team's been successful is that the head coach has done a good job of convincing them that everything that doesn't happen in the locker room or the meeting room or on the practice field is noise, and their job is to block out the noise.
Sure. That makes a lot of sense. And I guess that fans of the Cowboys, they know how Jerry Jones operates by now. It seems sometimes he almost can't help himself from these things. So are they firmly in Dak's corner too? Is that kind of the local tone? Everyone's behind Prescott from the fan base's perspective as well, I would imagine.
I don't know. No, fans are ridiculous. Fans are the worst people to talk about or consult. Fans want Romo, but they're scared of him, and they don't want Romo, and then he gets hurt, and then the kid comes on out of nowhere. Then, oh, poor Tony, they took his chance away, and his team is good again, and oh, poor Tony, but oh, Dak, but oh, poor Tony, but oh, Dak. And then he has a bad game, loses for the first time in 12 weeks. Oh, we better go back to Tony. Oh, we got to have Tony. No, that's not how you run a football team. Fortunately, the people who run the football team understand that that is not how you run a football team.
So
that's fans. You don't listen to fans.
Of course.
Fans, fans are for subscribing to podcasts and magazines and calling talk shows and talking about it because it's fun, because it's not their job. People who run the football team, it's their job. They can't listen to fans.
And Brad, a quick thank you to our Pro Football Weekly fans, of course, for subscribing to this podcast and listening
to our interview. I've got fans who have been listening to me on the radio. Absolutely. Love them. Cannot pay attention to them if you're the football team.
So what do you think about, you know, the offense is seemingly in cruise control for 11 weeks or the better, you know, the better part of it. And it has been a little less functional the past couple weeks, and people want to ignore that they played two great defenses on the road in Minnesota and New York.
Yeah, so, how about that?
Yeah, it's amazing how we can sort of just omit certain facts.
Hey, Arthur, let me take issue with one thing you said, and that's the part about cruise control. I have heard Aikman for the better part of 20 years talk about how people think that in 92 and 93, just because they won the Super Bowl, in retrospect, everyone thinks they won all those games easily. And he will tell you that's far from the case. They trailed in some of them. They struggled in some of them.
Right.
I would quibble with saying that the offense has been on cruise control. It's been very good.
Okay.
And when you are this deep into a season, you know, I think you can be a fluke for even a quarter of a season. It's hard to be a fluke for 12 games.
Right.
And so they've been good. Now, I think what you said about those defenses on the road is pretty significant, and I hope people heard you say it.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota has been one of the three best defensive teams, both statistically and on tape and on the field, all year long. And they were one. Dallas was 1 out of 9 in that Thursday night game in Minnesota on third down. Now,
right.
Of the 1 out of 9,
mm-hmm.
three of the 8 that they didn't get were actually first down plays that were brought back by penalties, and in every case, away from the ball. Didn't have anything to do with the play. Doesn't mean it was a bad call, but they were penalties, but they weren't the reason the play was converted. And another one was a dropped snap for only the second time all year.
Mm-hmm.
So now all of a sudden, if you're 4 out of 9, and they won the game.
Right.
Now if you're 4 out of 9... or 5 out of 9, and instead of scoring 17 points, you scored 23 points, just give them 2 more field goals. Don't give another touchdown. Well, it's a whole different look. Last week against the Giants, they had their worst offensive game. The Giants had a lot to do with that. By the way, Dallas was 1 out of 15 on third down. The Giants were 2 out of 14.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 10-7 game. It wasn't 35-3. They made plenty of mistakes, played very badly. I think Prescott played poorly. I think he wasn't the only one. I think Dez Bryant had a horrible game. A whole bunch of things. Giants, a big reason why they ran into some weather for the first time. Got to happen this time of year. You have to learn how to handle it.
Right.
But it hasn't been cruise control. They are a blue-collar, ground and pound, and then use the running game to open up their passing game offense. They're the only team in the league that runs more than it throws, the only one. And that's not cruise control when you're running like that. I'm not sure they didn't get away from the running game a little bit. That happens sometimes inadvertently. You don't mean to do it, and then you're in the game, and suddenly you're trying to get things going, and you get away from what you are. So I don't think they've been on cruise control. They've been good. They, as you said, they ran into two really good defenses on the road.
Right.
They won one. They lost one. So the team that was 4-12 last year, injuries had a lot to do with it, is now 11-2. So we'll see what happens.
So, Brad, what happens when a hot defense, not overall as successful, you know, over the long haul as the Giants and the Vikings have been, but Tampa Bay, at least in terms of being opportunistic, is as hot as any in the NFL. I think 14 takeaways over the past 5 games during their win streak. But they're going to bring a different approach. I thought what the Vikings did and what Steve Spagnuolo did was just a very aggressive game plan that seemed to maybe fluster Dak a little bit. Mike Smith's going to be different. How do you think Sunday night plays out? How do the Cowboys respond to, you know, a little bit of adversity at this point?
It's a great test, and
yep.
And Bill Parcells likes to say that the job in the NFL is not to try to avoid adversity. Adversity's coming every time. The question is, what do you do? How do you respond?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see. They're going to be at home. I think that's a plus. You're 100% right, of course. They are going to see a little bit different style. Although it's always interesting going into these games when you see two teams have some success blitzing, and then you play a team that's been successful not relying on the blitz.
Right.
And teams have to decide whether they want to be who they are or whether they want to try what's been successful against their opponent recently. So that'll be an interesting part of it. And I think for Dallas, if Dallas is going to be as successful through the postseason as they've been through the regular season, that one of the things that's going to happen is that their really good blockers are going to be able to block some really good defenders, and their runners are going to be able to make some yards. And if you can make some yards on the ground against almost anyone, you have a decent chance, and you stay with it, and it's not flash in the pan, you know, you got 100 yards, but 50 of them were on one carry. I'm talking about a steady diet.
Right.
If you do that, you got a pretty good chance of being able to throw the ball the way you want to throw it. I'm just been sitting here rewatching some of Tampa's win over New Orleans last week. These games are all so competitive, and frequently they are a little bit misleading. New Orleans dropped two touchdown passes.
Yep.
And, you know, if they don't drop those two touchdown passes, now that doesn't mean that everything else is going to unfold the way it did from there, but there's no doubt that over the last five games, Tampa has done a phenomenal job of limiting their opposition scoring. They've done it by pretty much being true to their scheme, and they have really fast linebackers and really good active defensive linemen. And so it'll be strength on strength in that regard, and it'll be interesting to see. I think Dallas will play better. That doesn't mean they'll win, but I think they'll play better.
Is Rod Marinelli the assistant coach of the year with the parts he has to work with? And just tell us a little bit about that defense. Everyone talks about Dak and Zeke, and I do want to get back to them at the end. I have to ask you about some potential awards and your mindset on those. But before we do that, just tell me a little bit about how Rod Marinelli is making this work. I see Sean Lee all over the football field, and I don't see a ton of other big-time playmakers. What am I missing?
You're not missing a thing. They've got some really hard-working guys, and they don't have any great players. And except for Sean, I think Sean's a great player.
He's been
and,
excellent.
Two years ago, when they were 12-4, the formula was pretty much the same.
Right.
They ran the ball better than anybody else in the league. They threw it effectively off the run, and defensively, what they had going for them was sound gap control, assignment sound football, and they were able to create turnovers, which is the great equalizer on defense, by being ahead in the score and forcing the other team to have to take more chances, and by gang tackling and swarming. So this year, now the they did have Rolando McClain, who was not consistent, but who was a big time talent. They didn't have Lee that year.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that they got into some of the personnel problems they had last year was because they didn't have anybody who could rush the passer. And they went into the divisional playoff game in Green Bay, and Aaron Rodgers was playing on one leg, and they couldn't get to him. So they drafted, took a chance on drafting Randy Gregory and signing Greg Hardy. And that was why they did that. And it's the same thing that's happening this year. They have a lot of good, above average to good players who are playing assignment sound football. They're pretty much tackling well. I will say that they have guys in the secondary playing better than they have played. Mo Claiborne, before he got hurt, and I think they hope to have him back for the last regular season game or two, but he was playing at a Pro Bowl level. Not, forget about interceptions, just the way he was covering, tackling, breaking up balls, and he did it all through training camp. And that's better than he's played as a pro. I think Brandon Carr has played more soundly and covered better than he has at any time in the 5 years that he's been here. So some of that's coaching, some of that's the individual effort of the players, but mostly, you know, Marinelli gave him the book, the Little Orphans, before the year about the 1930s era high school team in Fort Worth that it's a famous football story. They were literally orphans and won a state championship just by basically want to and smarts, and that's what he calls them. They're little orphans, and they've adapted and embraced that label, and they play hard. They give everything they've got, just not all of them have as much as some other guys. But when you are scoring points and when you're dominating the ball, you know, I think time of possession is the most overrated statistic in football, but when you're running more plays than the other team, then you've got a chance to keep a defense like that fresh. And when they've run into trouble is when they have not been able to do that offensively.
And is there any expectation? I mean, absolutely, and they're certainly overachieving from that regard, I think. But the takeaways haven't really come. The consistent pass rush hasn't really come. Those are going to be key factors, I would imagine, in the postseason, especially if someone can kind of mimic what maybe New York has done and stymie the offense a little bit. Do you think, whether it's DeMarcus Lawrence taking his game to the next level or someone else maybe finding another gear, is there sort of an X factor on that defense maybe that we're not thinking about that you think may loom larger?
No. Arthur, I'd like to tell you, yeah, but no.
Okay.
They can't. Santa is not bringing someone to put under the tree to rush the passer who has not been there all year.
Has the book been closed on Randy Gregory for this year officially?
No, not officially. I don't believe they're counting on him.
Right.
You know, Jerry might like to talk about it again, but
right.
No. As a matter of fact, the league hasn't said anything now. Realistically, let's say he plays. He is technically, as we speak today, he is eligible to start practicing next week.
Okay.
But that there's also rumors that the league has another suspension in store for him for having missed a test.
Okay.
But that would be, I just think it's foolish for Cowboy fans to talk about or think about him. I will say this, he's been here, you know, since he's been allowed to work out. He's been here on a regular basis. He's around the facility because he's allowed to be. He can't practice.
Okay.
But he's working drills and with trainers separately every day. I mean, I see him, and he's working really hard. He's got a problem, and he's got to address that in his life. Sometimes structure will help with that, and that's a whole different issue. If he were allowed to play and then able to play and gave him anything, that would be such a bonus. It's not even worth their talking about or thinking about.
Okay, that makes sense. And we have to remind everyone he is a second-year player who really didn't show a ton as a rookie. I think he came on a little bit at the end of his rookie season, but probably...
Yeah, exactly. He really didn't do much.
Yeah, expecting anything substantial from him is probably naive, as Brad said. Spending just another minute or two here with Brad Sham, the voice of the Cowboys, I do want to just quickly get back to Dak and Zeke. I know that's what that's the main attraction with this team right now, and I know that the Cowboys are much more concerned about different hardware, but it's been a big topic of conversation. Are these rookies potentially in MVP conversation? Are they the front runners for Rookie of the Year? Are they going to split votes from each other for these awards? How do you think those two situations will potentially play out as it pertains to the Cowboys?
Those are really questions for people who do the voting. Players
right.
don't do the voting, and I think that it's a compliment to both of them that their play's been good enough that they are in those conversations.
Mm-hmm.
I would think they would be very prominent in the Rookie of the Year voting, and I don't think you could go wrong either way. They'll probably split votes. I mean, it's easy to pick Elliott because his statistics jump off the page at you. I think that Prescott's exceeded people's expectations because he was a fourth round guy who came to camp as the third quarterback. Zeke came in as the starter from day one, so different deal. But they've both been exceptional. MVP is so subjective. I mean, depends on when you vote. I sure would be. I should be looking at Matthew Stafford. You know, I'd be looking at. I'm not sure you won't be looking at Aaron Rodgers before you're done. If you wait till the end of the regular season to vote, different guy in the second half of the year. But they've been the team with the best record, and if you subscribe to that, you know, best player on the best team theory, then yeah, probably either one of them. There was some talk early in the year about the offensive line, and I still do think that's the hub of the team. Mm-hmm. But I think either one of them is worthy of being talked about.
Yeah, and it'll be a fun conversation that will continue for the next several weeks, obviously. And, Brad, we are out of time. Amazingly, I don't know where it went, but it's been such a great pleasure to have you on the Pro Football Weekly podcast, and I hope we can do it again somewhere down the road, and I hope you enjoy the rest of this Cowboys ride.
I look forward to it. I hope the team I cover is playing in the playoffs, and it'll be germane to talk about in 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, if they are, then I'm going to call you back. We'll see if we can get you back. Thank you again so much for the time, Brad, and enjoy the rest of your day and the weekend.
Thank you. You too. It's been a pleasure.
That's Brad Sham, the voice of the Dallas Cowboys for the past 38 years. Nice enough to take time out of his busy schedule to join the Pro Football Weekly podcast. And one more thank you to Brad Sham. Great stuff on the Cowboys. And we will take him up on his word. If the Cowboys are still alive here in about a month with the playoffs underway, we'll get Brad back to break it down because that was a lot of fun. Also want to thank Hub Arkish, as he does each week, for hopping on the show and dropping some knowledge about what he's hearing from around the league, some great hot seat discussion. It's not necessarily pleasant hot seat discussion, but some pretty good scoops from Hub at the beginning of this podcast, and we do thank him for that. We also thank you, of course, most importantly, the listeners, for being with us each week on the PFW podcast. And the easiest way for you to do that, one more reminder, is to head to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a review while you are there. That would be much appreciated. And it's really going to do it for this week's program. I hope that you enjoy week 15 in the NFL. A lot of fun action going on. One more reminder, if there are any previews that you missed out on from this podcast, head over to the website. We have breakdowns of every game in the NFL. We've got plenty of feature stories and columns and videos and podcasts and all that fun stuff, and we would certainly encourage you to head over there and check it all out. That's going to do it. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. Please stay warm out there. Stay safe. We will be back with you again on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. I'm your host, Arthur Arkish. Have a great week.